So I do see it as spiritual. I mean, how could it not be? I certainly have a reverence for the earth. I just finished reading a biography of John Quincy Adams in which he said, "How can you walk in nature and not believe in God?"
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Maybe you've heard of the Five Love Languages. It was a pretty famous book, and it mentions physical touch and words of affirmation or spending time one-on-one. I think we need to add a sixth love language, though, and that is food. We've heard that God is love, but I think food is love too, or at least can represent love. In ancient times, feeding traveling strangers was an obligation because they could die if no one shared water or food in the desert. And even today, it's still an intimate gesture to invite someone to a meal at your house or even share produce from your garden. And of course, Jesus is known for miraculously feeding multitudes of hungry people and equally famously told us to feed the hungry. Our guest today found herself doing just that for a whole community when she offered up some land she had for an interfaith community garden in Massachusetts. Carla Fortman is the leader of the Lexington Interfaith Garden, a community project beside the historic Lexington Battle Green that has supplied fresh produce to the local food pantry for 15 seasons. Carla is also a registered nurse, the manager of the museum shop at the Buckman Tavern, and the former owner of the Crafty Yankee, a gift shop in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Well, we've lived in our house that faces the Battle Greens quite a long time. So this house, when we bought it in 1980, had 58 acres of land. Now we just have 1 1/3, and all around us is built up. But we're only the third family to live on this property since the 1600s.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I had 3 boys, and we had friends living in Vermont who were growing all their vegetables and things like that, and had their own chickens and so forth. We have a barn and we have it over an acre of land. When we arrived, there was a horse ring because the people before us had 2 horses. We squared that up and made a pretty large garden. As our boys got older and matured and we were just the 2 of us in the house, we were leaving 1/3 of that fallow just to give it a rest, and we didn't need any more things. So along about the same time, I was cleaning our basement and there I found some pickled beets, which I had grown the beets, cooked the beets, and then not eaten the canned beets. I thought, there's something wrong here. About that time, our food pantry started taking fresh vegetables they never had before. It was just peanut butter and canned soups and things like that, as I think is traditional for food pantries. Now they're happy to have fresh produce.
So you're in this really interesting place where you're very proximate to the Battle Green in Lexington. Do you see any connection or importance with that location?
I live next door to First Parish Church, which means a lot. In all New England towns, there is a church called First Parish Church because when you became a town in the 1600s, you became a parish and everybody went to church for 6 hours on Sunday and there was no exceptions.
Wow.
Learning all this history has helped all this happen. The original church was on the green. It was the original meeting house. This is the 5th reiteration of it. So 3 were on the green and then it became a country and you weren't allowed to have a church on public property. It was moved, but it was moved onto property that this house owned. And it used to be the garden for this house. Now, the church owns some property around us, and some church members whom I knew from schools and things like that decided to have a garden on their property, which is adjacent to ours. And they did really well. They just put compost on top of the grass and put a little fence around it, and they had zucchini and peas and all sorts of stuff. But they needed water and they couldn't get a hose from the church to them. So they used my water. After the first year, they said, we could use that fallow part. And I said, let me think about that. And so I live near 5 churches. So across the street is the Hancock Church. That's a Christian church. And they had a minister, an assistant minister, Dana Ellen Walsh, and she was very interested in gardening and how gardening can bring people together and how important it is to know about gardens and know where our food comes from. And so you have to understand that we have in our interfaith clergy, 14 faith-based community, 2 Jewish temples, Muslims, we have evangelical church, 2 Catholic churches, Chinese Bible churches, oh, we have all kinds. And that Lexington Interfaith Clergy Association, LICA, has many projects. They have a project resettling immigrants that we might get into Lexington. They're working on the Haitians now. And previous to that, it was from Venezuela and then long time ago from Cambodia and things like that. It's been around for a very long time. In fact, the early churches usually were housed at other churches, like Hancock housed the Jewish congregation in their basement until they had enough money to build their building. So it's part of our community, and it has to do with the history and how we all started.
Well, first of all, it was generous to offer water and then generous to offer the fallow land. What made you decide, I'm just going to stick with this? What did you see happening that made you decide that?
Well, first of all, I think the garden is a great place to bring people together. And it seemed to make a lot of sense. I'm very evangelical, but even though I go to Catholic church, I'm very much for outreach. And I have many friends in all these other churches. And I was really doing it mostly by myself. My sons who used to help me were gone. My husband was busy bicycling and traveling for his job, but I didn't want to give it up. And it's a nice big space. So I just said, why not, if you'll just let me be in charge and then you bring me volunteers. We have Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts who come. So it is a real mix of people. We've made some wonderful friends, but there's so many of us who have never put a seed in the ground and watch it grow.
Do you have volunteers show up and say, what do I do?
Oh, yes. They don't know what to do. They plant them too deep. They plant them too close together. And they say, oh my gosh, look how big it got. Yes, that's good. Like zucchini, all those things. And then we just harvested potatoes on Tuesday. And that's always a joy. Because you dig them, there they are. Right.
You don't see them until you start
using
the fork and pulling them up.
That's true. And children especially love digging for potatoes, even though they might not like to eat them.
So what do the volunteers, I mean, they get the joy of seeing this sometimes for the first time. What do they get out of it? What do you see?
People just enjoy coming, partly for the community, but partly also because you're actually doing something. You're doing something to make something happen. It's not immediate. But you're doing something, and it does help. Our food pantry used to be 65 to 75 family, is now 125 to 150 families. So it is really needed, and they love the fresh produce.
And it's so much healthier.
It is, right. It is, right.
So just from a faith aspect, lots of holy books start off with a scene in a garden. We're there in Genesis, and then things sort of go wrong, and it's like, oh, we've got weeds now. Dang it. And so now we've got to deal with that. And what we've got to sweat and work at it. And all of those lessons to me seem like they're things that can be learned right there in a garden, like what you're providing.
Well, and often when you're, picking beans, those are boring jobs, over and over again. And then I always say, because I can usually go down a row after somebody's picked, and it's surprising what's still there. Because I said, seeds want to hide. They don't want to be found. They want to make a new plant. I once read in a wonderful essay about robots that we should have imitated seeds because they go back to nothing and then turn into something. It's different than being a human.
You mentioned your Catholic background, and that's where you go to church. Did you feel like this was also kind of an opportunity to serve in sort of a spiritual way, to provide, as Jesus says, for those who might need food?
Well, actually, I just think, who's ever up there blesses this garden. This year's example was we cut our garlic scapes, and I usually try to keep some for myself because I like to make garlic scape pesto. I don't know if you've ever had it, but it's delicious.
Oh.
Anyway, but they sent them all to the food pantry, and I didn't have any. But I have a neighbor who had a garden who said, Carl, I had so many garlic scapes, and he brought me a whole bunch the same week, like 2 days later. And I thought, that's the garden. Somebody's up there looking out for all of us.
I'm wondering, how do you decide what to grow? Because I think some of the items, as I've read, have changed over the years, maybe depending on the population and what they needed.
That's true. I never grew any Asian things, but we have about 1/3 Asians in our town and at our food pantry. Bok choy and Chinese cabbages, naphtha cabbage, things like that. And they grow fast. They're like radishes. You can just keep harvesting them over and over again. So I keep those Asian things there all the time. They've also taught me, the Asian people who volunteer have taught me a lot about how they harvest things. We have shiso. I don't know if you know what shiso is, but it's used to wrap sushi, something mm-hmm. I never eat. But they're beautiful leaves. You can put them fresh in a salad, or you can wrap them around a piece of fruit or a piece of meat, or you can cook them. And so we have shiso around the garden, and there you just take the good leaves and put them in a... I use cellophane sleeves because I'm trying not to use any plastic, which is very difficult these days, but very worthwhile. And we even harvest some of our wheats. We have purslane, and lots of people from the Middle East and Asia eat purslane cooked and raw. So we harvest those before they flower. We harvest the weeds. I always say to the girl who runs the food pantry, is there anything you don't want me to bring? She says, there's nothing left. So it must be good. And more to the question of how I decided, I usually decided that what I usually grow. So that was lettuce, radishes, carrots, broccoli, cabbage. You asked particularly about asparagus because it's a tradition in New England to have an asparagus bed. And mine was put in 1980. And then after 25 years, they said it wouldn't produce anymore. So I put a second bed in, and now I have two beds still produce.
Both of them.
People don't realize that asparagus is just a fern. I mean, so you're just picking it before it becomes a fern. So when they see it grown, they think, well, that's not asparagus. But you got to get it in those first 10 inches when it's first coming up. That's really our first harvest, our asparagus. And so asparagus and lettuce and rhubarb.
We read that the asparagus was sometimes growing like 2 inches in a day.
Oh, yes. In the old days when Massachusetts had a lot of asparagus growing in the fields in the western part, children got days to go and help pick the asparagus because you can pick morning and evening. You can pick twice a day. And that's a very short season, you know, for the asparagus, but it's worth it.
I wonder how you see people of different faiths working together. How does that work? Are they there at the same time? It's not like one congregation takes Tuesday, one takes Wednesday, or are they mixed together?
No. It's mixed, usually. It's usually a person at each faith-based community is in charge of the volunteers. So that person gets contacted and saying, your schedule this Saturday, we have two people from Fallen Church, two people from St. Bridget's Catholic Church, two people from St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church. That's it. So we'll have those six people. And I have it through the end of October. Yeah. Our schedule is planned out ahead. And we've had some really hot days. People have had to cancel. Two people from the churches emailed me Tuesday and said, I don't know if anybody's going to show up. It was like 98 degrees here, but they did. And we harvested potatoes, and it's an airy backyard, and there's usually a little breeze. And I bring water, and that we've got the barn so we can go in. At this time of year, there's quite a bit of shade on half the garden, which is a big help. I just make them take breaks, but you know, they're troopers.
Carla, this sounds like at least a part-time job for you.
But you know, I've never tired of it. I never resent going out there. Some of my other volunteer things, I think, oh, why do I have to do that? But not the garden. I don't know. It's just a special place. It is a special place. And it's, look what it's given us for, we've lived in this place since 1980. And I think of all the meals we've had. You know, last night we had people over. We had carrots, radishes, cucumbers, tomatoes, all from the garden. And, you know, people said, oh, radishes. Nobody ever serves radishes anymore. They were just our thinnings. So, you know, they were fresh out of the garden.
Do you see gardening, maybe just gardening in general? It sounds like you love being out there. It makes you feel good. But also this practice of having the interfaith garden, is that some sort of a spiritual practice for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how could it not be? Because, you know, I just finished reading a biography of John Quincy Adams in which he said, you know, religion is one thing. How can you walk in nature and not believe in God? He said, all that other stuff that we make up, I wasn't so sure. He did truly, and I certainly feel that. In fact, I think of it almost, you could say a mission. I don't talk about it a lot, but I don't know if you know the book Braiding Sweetgrass.
I know of it, yes.
Well, if you haven't read it, it'll change your life. I mean, here is an eminent botanist and an Indian who understands we really shouldn't be using anything that doesn't go back to dirt if we want to keep our earth healthy.
Yeah.
Up on my wall up here, I have the letter of Chief Seattle. How can you buy and sell the earth? The earth is all of us.
That is so meaningful and insightful. And I'm thinking of one other quote of Chief Seattle, where he is saying that if they sell the land, we have to remember that it's sacred and teach our children that it's sacred, and that the murmur of the water is the voice of his father's fathers. Rivers are our brothers and quench our thirst, and we have to give the rivers the kindness we would give to any brother. Those are beautiful quotes, and I think we believe them. I live in a little condo now. We've downsized twice as our kids have gone. But we had to look till we found one that was at least big enough for grow beds in the backyard. And it just looks empty every winter. But then, like right now, we can hardly walk through it between the beans and the tomatoes and just how big everything grows. And my wife has this joy of being out there with it all going on. And it sounds like you have that very same enthusiasm.
I'm very proud of it. And, you know, you see people at parties, they're all dressed up. And you think, how do I know you? You know them from the garden.
I've only seen you in overalls.
Right. That's sort of a special privilege. So I do see it as spiritual, although I don't, certainly every day, I don't think about that. I certainly have a reverence for the earth. And you would guess I'm a mad recycler. Like, I can't believe that only 10% of our country recycles anything. It just, and that's because they don't understand where it all comes from. And the garden is one lesson in that long list of lessons.
You're reminding me of the John Quincy Adams quote you just shared. How can you walk in nature and not believe in God? That's what my wife says almost word for word. So she grew up in a trailer court in Los Angeles with white rocks for a yard. That was the whole yard. And it was only during her college years that she discovered that you could grow your own food. I mean, she didn't know that potatoes grew in the ground. But once she discovered gardening and we had a little bit of land, it's like she sank her feet into the earth and connected with creation in a new way and has stayed rooted there. She's a fantastic gardener now. And that's a love she's passed on to our children as well. In fact, instead of making them help in the garden, she would say, oh, well, only when you're old enough. I don't think you're old enough yet. Until they were just begging to help her and she finally, quote, relented, unquote. My youngest would go out on late spring mornings and just sit himself down in the pea patch and pick and eat his breakfast right there. He still, even though he lives in an apartment in Boston, not far from you, has a garden in pots on his teeny back porch. And my daughter has a garden, and just the other day I walked into their house and my four-year-old granddaughter ran to greet me saying, we have tomatoes, our very own tomatoes. So the gift and lessons of gardening are getting passed on. And the time it takes to grow something is something to appreciate.
You know, you would never throw any food away if you've grown it yourself. Mm. You wouldn't.
I love that you use the word reverence, reverence for the earth, for the creation itself. Because I think we forget that we're part of that. Or culture, maybe especially the 1900s Western culture, taught us we're a separate thing from it, over it, and above it somehow.
And somehow deciding what it's going to be, I think somebody else decides all those things.
Carla, have you seen any of the volunteers try growing stuff on their own once they get a little experience, whether in a plot of land or in pots or anything like that?
Oh, yes. They often say that. In fact, we share sometimes if I have thinnings and some, they'll take them home and try to grow them. You also should know that a girl who I knew since she was a high schooler came to me and said, she's now a beekeeper. And she said, would you like to have some beehives here? And I said, sure, that'd be great. But it doubled our harvest. So we have two hives.
Because it increased the pollination of all the plants.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, there weren't any native bees, you know, in the old days. It was just mosquitoes and flies and other wasps and things, or wind. But the honeybees, which Europeans brought over with them, who knows whether that's because of herbicides and pesticides? I don't know. We don't put anything on our land. I've been to several Williamsburg gardening conferences, which I would recommend to any gardener. And they said, no blue fluids, no Miracle-Gro, no herbicides, no pesticides. Make your compost, put it back in. So that's what we do.
That's beautiful.
We even use all our leaves. The Boy Scouts built me a cage for my leaves, and we take every leaf on this property and we use it in the garden through the year.
So do you use a mower to mulch it?
No, we don't mulch it. We just leave them whole.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
But I use them in the compost as part of the layers, and we use them on the paths. I used to do newspapers and hay, and, you know, it costs money, and then the wind would come and blow them on the fence after all that work. With leaves, I don't have any of that problem. So we even put a heavy leaf mulch around all our tomato plants this year. Seems to have done a great job.
Just as you talk, I'm not only seeing the images visually in my mind, but you're reminding me one of my favorite smells in the fall. It's wet fallen leaves.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're reminding me of, after things have been watered, you walk past a tomato plant and there's this really distinctive smell of the tomatoes. You're reminding me of just how many wonderful smells there are as well in the garden.
Those cherry tomatoes that are hot from the sun and you pop one in your mouth. That's the best flavor for sure.
That's your garden candy. Are people allowed to snack a bit when they're getting the peas or whatever?
Well, I have blueberries and strawberries too. We brought 39 boxes of fresh strawberries to the food pantry this year. Again, Williamsburg, put your strawberries under your blueberries. There's no weeds. There's just strawberries and blueberries.
Wow. And these are the high bush blueberries.
Yeah, pretty high bush blueberries. Yeah. The plants are getting old. A couple of them have died, but people give me that.
Have you been surprised at how consistently all of these different congregations have, it's promoted as an interfaith garden.
Oh, it is. Yeah. We've had people from Australia call us and say they heard about it on the web and call us and go, how does this work and so forth. Gardeners are connected. And gardening is a huge tradition in New England. The Lexington Field and Garden Club here was the first one in our country. And it has a real long tradition also. We have three historic houses over 300 years old, and they each have herb gardens, and one has a colonial flower garden that are all maintained by volunteers.
Carla, you mentioned LICA, or the Lexington Interfaith Clergy Association. So that's the clergy getting together. But during this 15 going on 16 years of this garden, have you seen a change in relationships between the different congregations?
Well, we have some have dropped out because they don't have enough volunteers. The congregations have gotten smaller. Some of our congregations split for various reasons. You're never sure what. Oh, you hear different things, but you wouldn't pass it on. So, yes, that's true. But we also have, they have one of the most wonderful Thanksgiving services I have ever attended. Every Tuesday of Thanksgiving week, sometimes at the temple, sometimes at the various churches, they each host it. Many people speak. Somebody from the garden has sometimes spoken because they usually dedicate that take, the till, when they pass around the hat to one of their projects. So that's where some of our funding. So they support it not only with volunteers, but also financially for many things. Like after COVID, we had to start putting things in individual bags because the people weren't coming in the pantry anymore. They were just giving orders and then fill them. And that has still continued. So we have to do a lot more packaging than we used to, where we used to just put out a box of tomatoes or potatoes and people would take some from that. So that's changed a little bit.
My wife and I, when we visit our son, would we be able to sign up in advance and volunteer when we're out there?
Oh, you could just come knock on my door. It's Tuesday afternoon. And right now we're harvesting also on Thursday, because we have a lot, and so we can't get it all done on Saturday morning. You could just come. You wouldn't have to sign up.
That's awesome.
Believe me, I'll put you to work.
Many thanks to Carla Fortman for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Heidi Clough, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. Also, check out our YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, in Good Faith.
D
Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but you still want to stay informed? Well, you are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking and understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about, and can challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.